that they just arrested these two white guys.
About 3 months.
Yeah, this happened on February 23rd. Man, that was my birthday.
Yeah,
I'm born on February 23rd, so it really messed me up. KJ, you on there watching? You supposed to be calling in, man. What you doing? Look at this clown here, man. I tell you, boy. Yeah, I don't know what circus we gonna put him in. But anyway,
somebody on the line.
That must be KJ. I hope. KJ.
Hey.
What's going on? Hey, Johnny, come later.
What's the deal?
What's happening, old boy? You all right?
Oh, yeah.
Man, what's happening? You all right?
Posted up in there.
Yeah. You posted up like a light pole. But,
ain't no dessert.
Yeah, what I'm starting up with, KJ, tonight is that this murder, this heinous, I don't know what you got, hate crime. That's what I call it.
I see you.
Boy, you was reading my mind.
Yeah, ain't nothing but a hate crime that happened, man. And look, the thing that killed me is that this happened on February 23rd of this year. And they just now arrested these cats this week. Now, the thing is, people don't understand something. Crimes like this happen all the time. Them white folks push it up under the rug.
Oh, yeah.
The criminal justice system in these towns pushing up under the rug.
Yeah.
It's a good old boy mentality in all these small. And this ain't a small town. It's in Atlanta.
More
state exactly. That's all it was. They done ran this man down, talking about he looked like a burglar suspect in the neighborhood, and then killed the man, shot him down unarmed.
And it was self-defense?
Yeah, and then how was self-defense? Hey, man, look at that. Let me tell you something. These people have lost their damn mind, bro. That's all it is to it. Now, the thing is, black people come to find out about this, and I just don't think they raising no stink about it, you know, in Atlanta or in anywhere.
Yeah.
And you have to understand something. This, the only reason that this is anything is being done about this is not because they had already seen the tape.
Yeah.
They had already seen the tape and hadn't done a damn thing. They only doing something because we seen the tape.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they don't give a damn about that. They already knew it had happened. They knew exactly what had happened. They swept that under the rug.
Yeah.
But when we started acting a fool and saw the tape, when it leaked out and the public saw it, it was an outcry and they had to do something about it. So don't ever think that justice is being served. Because let me tell you something. This happened on February 23rd. Bro, it's May.
Right
now. It's May.
Right.
So February, March, and the beginning of May.
Yeah.
So that's 3 months later. Now all of a sudden you want to make an arrest?
Hey,
yeah, that's wild, bro.
The roles have been reversed.
Right. Oh, yeah. War Bush. And they ran a white boy down and shot him in the hood. They'd arrested the whole damn hood. They'd had to bring two better ways over there.
I'm going to tell you how the roles were reversed. You remember Shannon Brown that played in the NBA with the Lakers?
Yeah.
He's not too long ago retired, probably about 3-4, right around the time Kobe retired, maybe a year too early. He he had a house up for sale, and
right,
he was in the house. He was in the house doing some cleanup or whatever. It was after hours, so the hours to view the house had already passed. He had no appointment for nobody to come view the house. A white couple driving by saw the house, came in the gate, went up to the house, and went inside the house. He don't know who they are. It's nighttime.
Right.
He don't know who they are. He take his shotgun out and shoot a couple of shots at the ground to try to scare him off. Cops get called to the scene. They take him to jail instantly.
What?
This just happened
at
last week.
House.
At his house. This just happened last week.
Right.
Not even last Friday, I want to say. No, Thursday. Yeah, this just happened last week. At his house. Ain't shot nobody. Ain't killed nobody. He's protecting his property. He don't know who these people are. He protected his property.
Exactly.
Didn't kill nobody. They took him to jail.
Didn't even injure nobody. Sound like
he didn't even injure nobody.
Might have scared the hell out of him, which is what he was intending to do. If he's shooting at the ground. Man, let me
same as that girl. Same as that girl about 3 years ago. Dude breaking her eyes. She just shot a warning sight at the dude. Didn't even kill him. Just shot a warning sight. She in the house by herself with her two kids. Dude trying to break in her house. She just shot a warning shot. They took her to jail on site.
Man, she's supposed to bust them in their behind trying to protect her baby. Yeah, but it's just crazy, man. I tell people all the time, brothers don't understand that it's hunting season for black folks, man. You and we the prey, bro. They out here got open, you know, open rights, it seems like, to just shoot us at their leisure. You know, that's why I try to be as cautious as I can, man. I tell any black man, bro, you got to keep your head on the swivel while you're out here, because these white folks are looking for any reason to try to take us off the map, man. Yeah, they looking for any reason. And this, I mean, to be honest with you, bro, this is really just one of the most heinous hate crimes I have seen in a long time. Now, that Trayvon Martin thing was off the chain. And the thing with, what's the big boy name that was selling the cigarettes? When they choked him out of
Michael Garner.
Yeah, Garner situation. Not his, man. But we got to understand, man, for every one of these that we hear about, it's five or six of them that happen in the hood every week that we don't hear about. The police really need to be retrained. They need some watchdogs on the police force. Because these laws, they got what they call it, the blue line or something.
Yeah.
Man, they like a damn street gang out there.
They
ain't nothing but a damn street gang.
The problem is they want us to tell.
Right. They want you to snitch.
Yeah.
But they ain't doing no snitch.
Not at all.
Yeah, they see their partner acting a fool, doing something against the orders of the law, you know, that they something they're not supposed to be doing against the rules and the regulations, and they keep it quiet.
I ain't gonna say all laws like that.
No,
I've been in a situation where, you know, a law was messing with me.
Right.
He even put me in handcuffs. He was trying to provoke me. Oh, you think I'm scared of you? Because you big. I said, no, you said you were scared of me because I'm big.
Yeah,
I never said nothing about it.
Right.
His partners were standing on the sideline. They was like looking at him like shaking their head. They did come through, say, man, what's up? Man? You need to take that man to act up. You can let that go.
Right.
And this is just over a female because he liked the female that I was talking to. You know, this is why
right.
I'm getting arrested.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, look at
you. So,
let me tell you something about it. I tell this to people all the time. Some of them laws, the same cats that used to get beat up in high school. They used to get whooped in high school, and they had no friends, no power. You know what I'm saying? They was the unpopular kids and all that. Now they got a badge and a gun, and all of a sudden they become a damn superhero. So
yeah.
You got to understand, you got to be careful with the police out there. You got to be careful with the... Man, black men just got too many damn people. We got to watch out. We got to watch out for the laws. We got to watch out for the white folk. We got to watch out for each other.
I find myself walking on eggshells because I'm a big black man. I got to move in a certain way.
Right.
You know, I can't just, you know, act a certain way without somebody being scared of me or thinking, you know, I can't put nobody's life in danger. They say they fear for their life.
Man, let me tell you something,
you know? How you feel for your life, and I don't even have a weapon. You got the weapon.
I ain't got a rock in my hand. I can't throw and hit a rock. They can't even throw a rock and hit you with. But you're scared. Let me tell you something, Rich. You know, and I know, that we have to move in certain ways. Like you say, because of your size, my size, you have to move in certain ways. I don't even talk loud to the police, bro, when they told me. Man, look here, I'm no sir, yes sir, and I'm just at low court. And what they say, use the inside court. Because if you get too damn loud, they get scared.
Yeah.
KJ, you know, too, you ain't no little bit of trouble.
You know, Ben, you know from first suspension. We got pulled over together.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? In my truck.
I hear you. Look, KJ, let me tell you a story about me and Reggie one night. We leaving the club. It's about 2:30 in the morning. Now, neither one of us had been drinking, so we wasn't drunk. Now, we are. Steve.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm trying to catch up with Steve. Steve, tell Steve to text Steve and tell him to go on the
All you gotta do is text partner 347-825-4.
Okay. Bobby No, if you're on the line, the number is 347-826-9424. Baby, that's like the number you gave me earlier. I remember that 9424.
And I'll make sure you hit one.
Yeah, and hit one so you can come on the line, Steve. But yeah, so we leaving the club one night, KJ, and we in Reggie's pickup truck. He had an old, what that was, an old school Chevy?
Yeah, old school Chevy.
Old school Chevy, yeah. So we riding, and the police pull us over. We ain't tripping. We got seatbelts on, everything. So we sit, we get pulled over. Odell said we breaking up. But, okay, Odell, thank you for the input, brother. So we get pulled over, KJ, and me and Reggie just sitting there. Reggie driving, I'm on the passenger side. Bro, when I tell you we sit there for about 30 minutes, 30 to 35 minutes with the lights just behind us, right? We waiting on a lawman to come walk up and get the lights, you know, lights of registration and insurance.
Yeah.
Bro, about 35, 40 minutes later, so the dude walk up, and he asked Reggie for his paperwork and all that. Reggie give it to him. Bro, they asked us to step out of the vehicle. When I tell you it's about 5 or 6 carloads of laws behind us for a traffic stop, the dude said it's a little young white boy that, okay. They, for some reason, maybe they said that the audio is breaking up real bad on the phone. I don't. No, it's not. Oh, you can hear it?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, maybe it's the Facebook Live. But anyway, Kate.
Facebook Live is crystal clear. I'm listening to it right now.
Okay. All right, well, whatever. So they pull us out the car. Like I said, about 5, 6 carloads of loud behind us. The dude say, hey, man, y'all was sitting in that truck shoulder to shoulder. I ain't know what to expect when I came up here. He, man, look at this man that called every law in the area, brother. Yeah, he didn't call every police officer that was available in the area. And, man, I said, bro, you ain't got to worry about nothing between me and us. We ain't trying to have – look, this is just a routine traffic stop. He ain't even been drinking tonight. So they, we laughed afterwards.
What did he say he pulled John out the car for if it was just a traffic stop?
He pulled us over for the hell of it because it was late at night and he seen us ride. That was the, that's the only he really never told us what the hell he pulled us over for. And I still don't know
what he pulled
us out. Huh?
Was you riding dirty?
No.
I just want to know where you riding dirty.
No, no, Bobby, no.
You have to be riding dirty is my question.
We had a
we was riding dirty. We were black.
We had a DWB driving while black. That was a damn charge. That's what they were supposed to take it to jail for. But after we got through laughing at the little white boy, he went on to let us go, and we went on home. Well, yeah,
he probably figured on the law of averages, one of y'all had a warrant.
Right. Well, he was wrong as hell. Thank the Lord. We went on home. But, yeah, man, we got pulled over for DWB. That was it. But, you know, like I say, man, I really think that a lot of these officers that are dealing with these day-to-day traffic stops turn into foolishness because they are under-trained and they're afraid as hell. They're scared. Why did you become a police officer if you was going to be out in the street scared?
That's my question.
Yeah, you could have, look, bro, you could have went and got your office job somewhere where they don't do nothing but throw a paperclip at your head. But out in the streets, they going to shoot back. They got some brothers out there make you put that little pea shooter, they get you up. These boys got some guns out in these streets.
I don't know how you scared and you want out the weapon. And you have it drawn.
Exactly. You the first one to the draw. And you scared to death. And all I got is my hand. It's your hand and you shooting at me. So these cats, they need to retrain them. Find a better way to evaluate them. Because like I said, a lot of them are these same cats that got beat up in school and teased and all that. So they got a complex already. We don't have no damn business out there in these streets with these guns. Some of them shoot their own damn self sometimes, scared behind. Yeah. Hey, look here. Get them cats look, they won't even
say all the time they need to be retrained. It ain't training. It's a mindset. That's their mentality.
Like I said, they need to do a psychological evaluation of these cats, man. Some of them ain't got the mentality to be out there on the street with guns.
Well, what can you not do?
They don't.
I mean, you sit in your house eating ice cream, you get killed. Jogging, you get killed. You're a little kid, 12 years old, playing with a toy gun, you get killed. Right. You know what I'm saying? You can't do nothing. You get pulled over for a traffic stop. Yeah, anything. If you reach for your wallet, you get killed. You tell the officer you got a license to carry a gun, you get killed.
Yeah,
I mean, what are you supposed to do? What you tell your kids, your son, especially your son?
Just to show you how they're going to change the laws again, y'all know them rednecks up in Michigan, up there at the state capitol with their guns and assault rifles protesting the lockdown, right?
Yeah,
for like
the past
3 weeks, you ever take. It was this black female lawyer that worked at the Capitol building. He'd been getting harassed here and there by some of the protesters. So the next day, she was, Wednesday or Thursday when she went to work. She reported to work with 10 brothers that had a license to carry, and they had their assault rifles out there. They escorted her to work, and they hung out in front of the Capitol for about 20 minutes to make sure she was okay. All of a sudden, now the governor of Michigan want to start saying, we need to change the laws about having the guns on Capitol grounds. It's going to cause a problem. But you weren't saying that when the white boys is doing it, though.
Right. Well, you got to think back what happened in California, man, with Huey P. Newton. Huey P. Newton stormed the Capitol.
Exact same thing.
When Ronald Reagan was there, they changed the laws.
Exactly. Hey, man, let me tell you something. The game is rigged, brother, and we start playing by they same rules, they re-rig it. If that's a damn word, re-rigged the game.
They figure they got it figured out
until we figure it out too, and then they like, hey, wait a minute, we got to change that because they done figured that out.
I tell you what, YouTube is full of videos of white boys walking down the street with their assault rifle, exercising the Second Amendment, and then you have a brother who does the exact same thing along the exact same street. And he getting pulled over and guns drawn. Now, the white boy, they come up on him calmly. Excuse me, sir. You know, may we inquire as to why you're walking with your with this assault rifle. You know, is it loaded? You know, they ask all the questions. Is it loaded? Do you have a license? May we see your license? Yada, yada. Sure, no problem. This dude walking down the street, same rifle. Brother, walk down the street, but he got cornrows. Walking down the street.
Right.
Here comes three or four cars. You know, they're stopping about almost half a block away. They're giving commands, weapons drawn, for him to lay down, face down, you know, push the gun away, you know, interlock his hands. I'm like, you know, same street, same exact weapon. As a matter of fact, two dudes did it at the same time. There's one white boy said he gonna do it first. He went down the street, and then the light skinned brother went down the exact same street, about maybe 10-15 minutes later. Totally different exchange. But when it comes to us, you know, we're not supposed to be able to protect our own, and you know, the Black Panther Party was brought up just for us to police our own neighborhood, because when the white boys came in and policed our neighborhoods, they brutalized. Well, the Panthers was the answer to the police brutality. They were like the first neighborhood watch. They were the answer.
Exactly.
They were the answer to that.
I tell people all the time, man, and it's a crying shame, but I don't think things gonna ever change. I mean, I hate to have that type of attitude, but man, it's gonna be hard for things. We've been going through this, man, since we got off the slave ship, of being treated differently because our skin color. I tell people all the time, your skin is your sin. You ain't done nothing wrong but showed up black. And that's to be honest with you, with a lot of these white folks and a lot of, you know, these laws and stuff, that's enough to make you not equal. You're not equal because you don't look like them. And we have to understand.
I think it's all psychological. It's all psychological.
Right,
I mean, think about it. The slaves that they took from Africa, man, they didn't go in there just taking anybody. They took the architects. They took the people who could work. They took the biggest of those big brothers, the big hands. They would want to get
the most physically fit,
you know,
within all of it. The superior genetics.
Well,
that's who they brought over.
Exactly. And so you think about it.
when they came up with the with how to control the slaves, you know, I forget the name of that doggone book because I got it at home. Lynch, the Lynch letters.
Yeah,
Captain Willie Lynch came from the Carolinas, and was trying to teach them how to deal with their slaves, because they were like, you know, how do you, one man, and a few other hands, white hands, by yourself, how do y'all deal with a large plantation of 1,000 slaves? How do y'all control them? How do y'all keep them from rising up, rebelling, and overcoming you? And it was like, it's very simple. You put light against dark, young against old, woman against man, you know, they'll be too busy fighting amongst themselves. You know, there's crabs in a barrel. You divide them mentally, and then you break them. You know, you got to think about what they did to break those big slaves. They broke them with guns. I mean, you know, coming on a slave ship, first one come on, bow, split his head in half. Next one come on, bow, split him. You know, shoot him in the chest, cut this one's arm off. You know, cut this one's leg off, chop this one's head off. You know, all this type of brutality, and then you know you get them, and then you get them into slave quarters, and then how do you break the biggest and the meanest of the slaves? You rape them. That's how they meant. That's what they meant by breaking. It wasn't just putting them under the sun in cruel conditions. No, they broke the man mentally by raping him. He was raped. You know, they raped
him. And they raped him right in front of everybody. So the rest of them wouldn't rise up. If they figured if we do this to the biggest one of y'all, the rest of y'all don't have a chance. No, that's how they instilled in us. You know, but the thing is, you bring me to another point, Steve, and I appreciate that. You bring me to the point that I was going to talk about anyway, is the division that we have among blacks still to this day. You know, we look, bro, you can't get four of us to go in on a 9-piece of chicken without a damn argument. And that's just that's an old saying, Steve, and I hate to say it, but it is a damn truth. You can put 20 Mexicans in a 9-bedroom house. You can't put 9 Negroes in a 20-bedroom house without them trying to kill each other. You know, them 20 Mexicans will stay in that 9-bedroom house and won't argument. But you put 9 Negroes. I mean, you can put 9 Negroes in a 20-bedroom house, and they're going to start a damn argument over how many damn rooms each one of them got. That's a damn thing. We can't
his is better than mine?
Right. His room a little bit bigger than mine. Look, you can have 4 Negroes on a 9-piece of chicken, and they're going to argue over that one last piece. Because he say, I paid the tax part on it. But he ain't even hungry. So why you can't let somebody else have that piece of chicken? We're going to argue over that one extra piece. That is crazy, bro.
Yeah.
But that's our mentality.
Yeah.
But that's how they started us with the Willie Lynch laws, and we just kept them going. We kept the division up. And we still keeping it up to this day. We as brothers, black folks, we don't like to do business with each other. We're going to spend our money with the Chinese people, and we still got these black folks in our community that think it ain't right unless it's white. I could tell a brother something, and he'll look at me like I'm crazy, and a white boy come along and tell him the same exact thing, word for word. Oh, yeah, that sounds right. I'd be like, boy, if you don't get your dumb ass somewhere and sit down.
That's just the way you deal. I mean, I got an auntie. She was looking to fix her credit.
Right.
And I've been through a situation before. I knew the sister that was on top of her job. You know what I'm saying? She hooked me up, helped me get my house and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So when my auntie asked me, you know, how did I do, clean up my credit, I told her how I did it and,
right,
you know, what the lady was charging. She didn't want to go to her because she was black.
She
was
black.
She decided to go, well, I'm going to go to this white man over here, this law firm. He's a little bit cheaper. But he wasn't cheaper in the long run because all he was
spreading papers out.
Yep.
Oh, I already know what happened.
Then she comes to me later on. Well, who was that from New York? I said, no, but you
And not only that, he spread the papers out so she could pay little at a time.
Yeah.
Because he knew one thing. She don't know simple math.
Yeah.
If I ask, she, if I give you 8 payments of $4 and compared to, you know, 1 payment of $25,
yeah,
you figure I'm going to go with the 8.
Exactly.
Yeah, because your ass don't know math. That's why.
And that's exactly what she did.
Yeah, and not only that, he didn't do what he was gonna, told he was going to do either.
He did.
Exactly. So, hey, man, look here. She got what she paid for.
Exactly.
She got what you were looking for, bro.
And she
got to say, oh, yeah, I got this wife, bro.
That's to me.
Right.
I didn't want to go to the person
exactly
that I tried to show it first.
Hey,
man, the person going to look out for you. But that's what we do.
Bro, you know how many stories I've heard like that in my life?
We want to go places where, you know, we want deals with our people.
Oh, man.
I can't get no.
Yeah, the homeboy hook up. We want the homeboy hook up.
But you gonna go to the white man?
But you ain't my homeboy.
Whoever does it, anybody but black,
and pay whatever they say. Yeah, pay whatever they say.
No.
Hey, that's us, man. Look here, man. You ain't got to. Let me tell you something. I'm gonna tell you this because I tell my wife this all the time. I stopped being surprised by what she was doing. 1995 was the last year a nigga surprised me, man. That was the last year I was surprised by what black folks do. Nigga, they ain't been able to surprise me since 1995. Bro, I don't put nothing past. When they do something crazy, I say, oh, yeah, that's about right. That's about it. That's all you say. Yeah, that's about right. Because let me tell you something.
95,
about
hey, 95, what was that, OJ?
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah. But let me tell you something about us, Steve. We are the biggest consumers of the most ignorant stuff in the world.
Exactly.
And every other culture know that. That's why they come and set up their businesses in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
And they can sell, man, look here. They can sell, man, they can sell used trash bags. You're going to run out and get one because we ain't got none. Used trash bags. They'll dump the trash out of your face and take it away. And we're going to buy it. Man, that's a good bag. We were holding that stuff. Maybe you could have bought new bags.
We talk about, we claim in our community. And doing the things we do as far as, you know, buying from each other.
Right.
But we can't do that because the first thing they do when the white man move out the neighborhood to another neighborhood, the neighborhood,
we want
to
follow him. We
want to follow him on out there to that neighborhood.
Right.
You know,
we want to follow him.
We don't even want it. You're not even want it there. But
bro,
you want to go out there because you figure what he got going over there is better.
Got to be better because he over there.
Yeah.
Because you can't stay with your people.
Now what they're doing, they moved everybody out of the city.
Now they coming back.
Now they coming back.
Yeah, they coming back. And then when they get back, guess what they're going to do? Raise the tax rate up so high,
You
can't bring your black ass back.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's how they do it. But we ain't got no, look here, bro. We don't have a fifth star game of the season sometimes. I'm like, well, you got to be the dumbest of all time with the stuff we do, man. We do some major stuff, man. I always tell people, black folks going to be all right. It's some niggas that ain't going to make it. The niggas not going to make it.
When we mad, we're burning down our own community.
Exactly. Go out there and burn the white folks' stuff down.
So why you have a ride in your own community? I mean, what
you know why?
That
you know why? Because we ain't got transportation cards. You walk outside and do a Molotov cocktail, you can't ride, you catch the bus before I get in.
Yeah.
Do whatever you got to do, man. But we say, man, look here. We come from a long line of ignorance. Is that a word?
I say we're not real.
Huh?
You don't give them a deal?
Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah, you ain't real, dog. Yeah, you sure right, but dog. They stay off the chain, bro. Like I say, black folks gonna be all right. Just these niggas that ain't gonna make it. That's just all there to it. We got so much. Yes. And then the thing about it is, we can't even do business with each other because we always think it's somebody trying to get over them. Or it's gotta be crooked or it ain't gonna be right. Man,
as a family, you can't even get along with each other.
Bro.
I mean,
man, I done seen knockdown drag. I fight just family reunion. But they careful.
Yeah.
And they try to kill each other in the park or wherever the hell they have the family reunion at.
I done had family members move in with me. They need a place to stay. You know you got to pay what you say.
Uh-huh.
Hey, they come up, hey, man, we're going to give you this such a month. But then when they start giving you the money, they start coming with excuses why they can't give you the money.
Yeah, you sure.
If I'm going to give you this much, I might as well get my own place. Well, you know, we're going to get your own place then. What you have for? And then you get out there and realize it was more than what you thought
it was. Exactly.
We should have stayed your black behind with your parents They help them do it.
Help them out.
Everybody helping each other, but we can't
do it. Let me tell you something. I used to go to these, you know, we used to be in the movie business. We go to a white family's house. All their kids lie to be there. But all them kids are contributing to the house, and they stay in a house big enough that they damn near don't even know each other there. Yeah, if black people came together and did that, they could get the same kind of house. If your kids was in their 20s and started working and just everybody put money in a pot, you go get a house, the biggest damn house, that you won't even know each other in the damn house. But we don't think like that. That is, I tell people all the time, in our household,
ma'am,
black people, huh? What's that?
Oh, no, that's my. Yeah, I'm at my parents' house. She was calling. Just hold on, Jose.
Okay.
Y'all keep talking. I'm gonna go help my mama with something.
Right. And like I was saying, if in our black household we started early teaching our kids financial literacy and the power of savings and good credit, and see in white households they teach their kids that.
Yeah.
In Jewish households they teach their kids. In Asian households they teach their kids that. In our household, we teach our kids, hey, look here, go to school, get that public school education, get your job, and work for somebody for the rest of your damn life. That's not what white people, white Asians, Jewish, other communities teach their kids financial literacy and the power of being an entrepreneur, a business person, and how to run businesses. They start. Look, they kids, when the last time you seen a lemonade stand in the they start early with their kids, teaching them how to take money and invest money in themselves,
yeah,
and reinvest money over and over again. See, that's part of financial literacy. We don't teach our kids that.
Yeah.
We give our kids stuff until they 18, when we tell them to get your ass out of the house. And they really ain't ready. They ain't ready for the world. That's why the world, when they go out there, the world whoop their behind. Because they don't really know how to function. They don't even know the power of money. They don't understand that money ain't number two.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's a tool to get what you need. But see, we think of money, our kids, soon as they get money, they spend money.
Yeah,
yeah we. You
right
got, so many black folks live check to check is ridiculous. You got black families who don't have enough savings. If they lost their job this week, they have to be evicted next week. Just that fast. No kind of savings in the bank, no kind of credit, no kind of financial literacy. They don't understand savings. They don't understand none of that. All they know is, I got to go to work this week. And the thing about a job is, I tell people this, whatever job you got, I don't care if you make $15 an hour, $17, whatever you make an hour. Whatever you make an hour, the company you work for is making three times that offer each hour that you work. That's the only way they can pay you that much. Because they got to pay you, they got to pay the company, then they got to pay themselves.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So it's got to be three times that much just for it to make sense for you to make that much money. But see, we don't look at it like that. But I learned that when I was working for that company and doing their paperwork,
yeah,
and saw how much they were charging for my black ass.
Yeah, that's
what I learned. I said, wait a damn minute, I don't make nowhere near. I make about a third of this.
Yeah.
I understood why. I started researching.
For Trump.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I started researching it. I was like, okay.
You might not even be a supervisor, but they got you listed on paperwork.
As a supervisor. Exactly.
They can charge more for
you. Charge more money for you. And you're not going to get nowhere near that,
yeah,
that wage that you're supposed to get. But, man, that's just, you know, like I said, we as black people need to get out, get in our own households. And I put the onus of the charge, rather, on the black father, the black man in the household. We got to take control of our community, our households first.
Yeah.
Let's take control and respond. Now, don't just go in there bossing everybody around. Now, that's not what I'm talking about. That's not taking control. What I really mean is take responsibility for your household first.
Yeah.
Then after you take responsibility for your household and start putting governing that, you need to take responsibility for our community. Because so many times in our community, I'm known back in the day, the black men on our street, you know, Herschelwood, where I grew up, the black men on that street were like the police.
Yeah.
If they saw you doing something wrong, hey, boy, get out them people's yard, hey, boy, put that down, you know, all of that back then. Now, black men see little young guy doing nothing, and they scared to say something to them.
Yeah, want you saying nothing to my child. You know what I'm saying? You're not his father. You're not his mother.
Right, right.
So you can't tell the child nothing.
But see, that's the community's weakness, man. That's the community weakness. And we got to get back to where black folks took care of black folks. You know what I'm saying? We need to get away from that. Because I mean, I understand, you know, that ain't my son, but he is a man, and I'm trying to teach him how to be a man. You know, and if I'm a man and I'm trying to tell him something, then let that be. You know what I'm saying? And not like I'm saying nothing to him to hurt him or giving him some bad information. He don't need to be messing with that.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it. But, KJ, what y'all think about that, man?
I mean, I hear what you're saying. And my thing is, we can sit there all day and talk about how messed up black folks are in regards to this and that and the third. But when you shit on or disrespect an entire race of people for 500 years, you prevent them from having the opportunities that some other people have. Am I making excuses for black folks? No, I'm stating the fact. We know what the problem is. The problem is everything you just mentioned. That's the byproduct of how we've been treated for 500 years. When do we start focusing on fixing the problem? Because we can sit there all day and talk about what's wrong. We're going to not only start talking about, but start doing something about it.
Well, the thing is, Kay, I understand what you're saying, but my thing is this. We got to quit blaming other people for our shortcomings. Because we, hey, man, look, we have opportunities and we neglect them. Look, we can go to school. We can go to school for free until the 12th grade. But how many dropouts you know?
Even if we stop blaming other people, that's still not fixing the problem. When do we start focusing on doing something about it?
I'm going to tell y'all like my daddy told me. Hey, I'm going to tell y'all like my daddy told me. Learning starts at home. Regardless of your first teacher, your first teacher is your parents. Learning starts at home. Everything, them little kids that come to me that I got to teach, every little bad habit,
right.
Everything they get, when their parents come to school, want to chastise and yell at me about why little Johnny doing X, Y, and Z, I tell them, man, learning starts at home. He ain't learning up here, man. He every little bad habit he got, he learned that from someone. He came here with it. I ain't teach
right.
little Johnny how to go in the bathroom and throw craps. I ain't teach little Johnny how to run around the hallway, pinch girls on the booty, slapping girls on the butt and run down the hallway. I didn't teach little Johnny
right.
how to come in there cussing like a sailor. I ain't teach him all that. He came
so
in with
me. Let me ask you this, Steve-O. And I agree 100%. Learning does start at the home. But I'm assuming you're speaking from a parental standpoint where the parents
teach their kids
everything that JD was saying about money management, about getting a career and stuff like that. And I agree wholeheartedly.
All that.
But does it stop them?
No, because it's supposed to be an extension. Everything my dad taught me, I'm teaching my son. You know, it's supposed to be. My dad told me, son, in order to prove to me that you're a man, you got to do better than me. He's like, son, I graduated from Yates. You know, my dad moved here from Opelousas, went to Ryan, went to Yates, you know, went to TSU. He grew up in Third Ward when he got here. So my dad was a product of the Third Ward community when he moved there, transplant from Louisiana. And he believed in it so much, he went to school and he did all the schooling in Third Ward, even his college, because
right.
he believed in his community. You know, he had great men to teach him that. Coach Pat Patterson, the guy they named the relays after. You know, Coach Marvin. You know, all these guys,
right.
you know, they invested in those children. They invested in those young boys. Because, see, my dad's daddy walked out of him when he was 12 years old. So he had other men that looked up to that helped to create the culture of what young men are supposed to be. They were coaches. They were men in the classroom who taught him this is what real men do. You know, your dad left, okay, that ain't no excuse for you to be no sorry-ass man. Here's what real men do. A real man does what he needs to do before he want to do. Now, you want to go outside and play, but you need to go home. You need to wash these dishes.
Right.
You need to put your clothes up. You need to take the trash out. A man does what he needs to do before he want to do. And that lesson my dad transcended, he put up on me as being the oldest child, and he put it on my brothers, and I put that on my children. Hey, man.
But
now,
hold on, Steve-O. What you just said is exactly what I'm talking about. That man wasn't your dad's father, was he?
No, it was just coaches. But there were men in his life who instilled valuable lessons in him that he took with him.
But the point that I'm making is That wasn't that man. Your dad wasn't that man's child. So his teaching,
right.
his schooling, his tutelage, stay at home. We have that obligation to teach at home first. But he
right.
took it outside of the home. He extended his obligation. And that's the point that I'm trying to make. When do we extend the knowledge that we have and the understanding that we have past the front door?
Well,
because we do have our
own. Let me answer. Part of it, bro, we cannot continue to be punk ass parents. We can't sit up here and be scared of everything and everybody. You know, I would walk from Thomas Middle School right across the street to the barbershop with JD and them, and I catch my students outside doing whatever. I say, hey man, hey, put that up. Oh, coach, man, we not at
there
school. Say, man, I don't give a damn where you at. You out here with other children and adults, man. Stop all that goddamn cussing. You cussing grown ass man with a capital gruh. I'm grown. I pay taxes. So if I and I, next I'm gonna bust across your head. How was this playing? I wouldn't. Because I'm going to say what I mean. I mean what I say. I'm going to have to stand on it because you're going to have to see that I'm a stand-up nigga regardless of where I'm at. But you're going to respect
that's right.
me.
Exactly.
But then I had to learn, too, when I had to deal with the thugs, I also had to make sure, too, that I wasn't out there taking their nuts in front of their people because then that caused a problem. So I still got to make sure
right.
I come at them a certain way when I say something. I still got to make
right.
sure that his G not being checked by me or anybody else around him. So he still handles his pay respect, but he gives me respect as just being his elder and his teacher.
But let me explain something
coach.
Too, Steve. Let me explain something too, man. The thing that y'all talking about, y'all both are right about what y'all saying, and I understand what you saying, KJ, and I understand what you saying too, Steve. Because Steve, I take your commentary differently because you are a educator, you are a teacher, you see so many different classes of kids
right.
over and
yeah.
over, you know, one after the other. So I know Steve
yeah.
is versed in what he's talking about. But let me tell you what the big problem is that we're not talking about, Steve and KJ both. The big problem is there is no more discipline at those households. These kids come out of those households with no discipline. They come out of there willy-nilly. They have no respect for older people, for any type of authority, because they don't get no authority at their house. A lot of these kids come from households.
You have to be able to say what you mean and mean what you say, and let a kid know, hey man, I'll bust your ass wherever you at. You know, if you
you dealing with an animal that come out of a household where they raising themselves. You know what I'm saying? A lot of these kids are raising themselves. Their parents ain't doing a damn thing with them. Ain't paying no attention to them. They're tired of their behind. They send them to school over-medicated or under-medicated, whichever way, because they don't want to deal with them. So you have to understand
right.
that you're dealing with a completely different type of animal than the people who had to deal with us are dealing with. You know what I'm saying? Because we came from a household where discipline was at our house first. Because I know
right.
I was scared of my
right.
dad until he died. You know what I'm saying? And that was
yeah.
like 3 years ago. So I my daddy told me a long time ago, you're going to be scared of me first. That's the first thing I want you to do is be scared of me. Because with fear came respect. See, and a lot of these kids ain't got no respect for nobody. They ain't got no fear, nothing. They ain't got no kind of respect. And they don't have no type of discipline in them households. Like you said, see, these punk parents raising these kids to be just as crazy as hell.
Well, you know.
But then that comes with too with being with respect in the classroom, in and outside the classroom. You know, I see my kids all over. You know, even the other day on Facebook, where I put up, you know, hey, you know, as an educator, if I've ever as a counselor, if I ever counseled you, taught you, coached you, whatever, you know, just hit me up with something.
Right.
You know, let me know where you're. And you got on my face. You saw the responses.
Oh yeah.
I know you looked them. You saw because. I was going to be the same person I was with them and around them. I knew that I had to make sure I gave them respect too. Because I knew at home.
Right.
You know, sometimes they had to do the adulting. You know, mama gone, you know, they get home, mama gone in the street. mama smoking, mama doing. I had a kid, man. He whooped his mama ass in the front office because she was smoking up his dope.
And
she came to school to get him, and his dope was short, and she whooped up on him. We found the dope in his bag. We pulled it out. He's like, nah, I had more than that. So I'm like, hey, dog, this we pulled out of your bag. And his mama was up there. She was kind of high. He jumped. He reached across the desk and started jumping on his mama because she was dipping in his dope.
Right.
Now, how you going to get – how your child going to respect you if, you know, you're not worthy of the respect? I'm 47 years old. I've smoked. I've drank. I've done all kinds of – my children have never seen it. My children have never even seen me with a beer. And I got alcohol at the house. I just picked up the new Ciroc summer watermelon. They ain't seen me crack nothing. I swear to God, my children don't watch me drink, watch me smoke.
Let me
I don't put it in their face.
Let me tell you the difference in our generation. I was 30-something years. Don't think my mama didn't know I drank beer and all that. But I was 30-something years old before my mama actually saw me with a beer can in my hand. She had never seen me drink before. She knew I drank because she didn't see me come home drunk. You know what I'm saying? So she knew I drank, but I had never let her see me with a beer can or an alcoholic drink in my hand until I was 30-something years old, brother. But that was because that was more of a respect thing. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It was more respect because I didn't want her seeing me. I didn't sit in her house drinking and tripping and getting drunk at her house.
Yeah.
Now, I might get drunk in the street, come to the house, but I'm not going to let her see me do it. But see, that's
right.
the respect level. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference that we're dealing with now.
Now you got parents who drink and smoke with their kids.
I was going to say, you got parents drinking and smoking with the kids. Teaching the baby how to roll them up.
Going out to the club.
Hey man, I had a student last year, man, that smoked and did pills with his mama. Last year.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get the dude to play no sports last year, but this year he went to CEP, he came back right before school, right in October and cause football was in and put that ball in the basketball squad and he loved it. I put him in so.
Right.
But when he was drinking and smoking with his mama, I couldn't do nothing with it. I couldn't get him to
do
nothing. Because all he wanted to do was go drink and go smoke, go and get and pop pills to his mom.
Exactly. No
you
kind
know,
of initiative,
but,
no
but
kind
like
of
said,
drive being taught at the house.
None.
But you know what we're not hitting
but
on
me,
is
but,
that what we're not hitting on is the government also has something to do with our kids not respecting us and doing because you know they protected us.
Right.
You know what I'm saying
it's just the, went away from
hey,
them.
The whoopings I got when I was a kid had to be child abuse.
Hey, man.
What was CPS
hey,
that doing? Look at your kid,
JD, I know I was damn near waterboarded as a kid. Man. I know I was.
I know I was.
Say, man,
hey,
I know I was.
Your mama was a terrorist. You see your mama was a Taliban.
I know about them extension cords.
Hey man, we still call my mama the Ayatollah. We still call my mama the Ayatollah.
Look at
hey,
man.
My mama 5 feet.
Looks like I had little league football trophies. My mama had whooping trophies, bro. Yeah, I had little league trophies on the mantle. My mama had behind whooping trophies up there on the mantle, right beside my trophy. So I know my mama.
Man.
Hey, my mama was a enforcer, brother.
Look, my mama had a mean backhand.
Yeah.
Even when I thought I was out of reach.
Yeah, you was.
I was in reach.
Yeah, you was in reach.
So you know, right now, you know, like I said, you know, kids know they can call CPS on you, and you know they can tell somebody, and everybody's involved in what you're doing with your child.
Right.
Your child is out there breaking the law and doing this, your fault.
Right.
You know, cause, hey, you can't handle your child.
Hey, JD. I thought a boomerang was a mythical weapon until my mama bent her slipper and threw it at me.
It
made that corner and bust me in the back of my neck.
Exactly. My mama would rattle your chops from anywhere, wherever you at. I've seen my mama slap my sister so hard, slobber come out there. I said, Lord, I don't want none of that.
No.
Look, I ain't have to get one. I'm good.
I'm going to sit
down
and be quiet.
And I know, Didi was a damn fool.
Look, my sisters, I used to be one to tell, hey, look, just shut up, be quiet. They, both of them had to have the last word. Some kind of last word came with a swole lip in my house. Yeah, you had a last word before I had a last slap, too. Yeah, mama wasn't no joke, brother. I was scared of that little show later. I'm still scared of her right now to this day. I could be 2 feet tall.
They took corporate punishment out of school, you know.
Yeah.
Parents used to go up to school and whoop your ass right there at the schoolhouse.
Right. And leave and go back to work.
Now
they've been out.
Hey.
And look here. My mama had a policy. Mm-hmm. Well, if you messed up, you got messed up.
Yeah.
That's just how it was. Yeah. It went on. Take them home and do this. I'm not going to whoop them in front. Boy, look here. If you ask the fool in front of people, I'm going to beat you in front of these people. That way,
I got
but I don't play.
Right there in the courtyard at Woodson Middle School. I ain't even get to the house.
Boyhood.
I ain't even made it to the car.
My mama would be on the back on the back pew of Reverend Nemo's church right there on South Acres.
Shoot.
Man, look at that. I ain't got a whooping on the playground at Grimes Elementary before. You know, be a on Reed Road and Reed and Jutland. Yeah, right on that corner,
yeah.
Reed and Jutland. I got a whooping in the back of that schoolhouse out there on the playground before.
Look,
yeah.
You know, I don't whoop my kids the way I used to get whooped, but they do know that I mean business.
I
was in the store one day. My kids was acting up, and I spoke so forcefully at them that the dude next to me was like, man, I need you to come to my house. My kids was looking like, man. I'm like, because I'm not playing with you.
Yeah, I'm not playing with you, bro. Yeah, and look, that's the thing about fathers. That's why I say fathers need to be back in the household taking care and helping rear these kids. We have gotten, as black men, we have, you know, copped out a lot of times. We done got out the household talking about, well, hey, my wife don't want to do this or this. But, hey, look here, regardless of what your relationship is with that woman,
yeah,
you need to have a relationship with them kids that you have helped produce. You need to be there for them kids. Whatever you got to do, be there for them babies, man, because the thing about it, daddy's role is a lot different from mama's role. You know, mama might, you know, just like in the jungle, a female lion roar, everybody hears, but when a male lion roar, everybody look around like, wait a minute, what was that? You know what I'm saying? But that's what we have to get back to, the presence of the man being in the household and helping raise these kids. I think that would deter a lot of this foolishness that we deal with this younger generation. But daddy got away.
JD.
You know,
I think
also
sometimes it's not good for you to be in the household.
Right, right.
Well, but, you know, you can't.
And you know what? That's the point I was going to make what you're saying. You don't necessarily have to be in the house. However, I just got to be some mutual respect between the two parents. There's got to be some kind
of
respect. You can't sit up here and tell this little boy, you ain't going to be shit just like your damn daddy. And then he grows up, ain't shit. Then you want to be mad at the whole world and you want to blame him. Well, you can't blame him. You told the little boy he wasn't going to be shit. You wouldn't let him be around his daddy for whatever reason. Daddy come around you got to send him away somewhere. You won't let daddy send because daddy might be behind the child.
You bad mom and daddy when he ain't around.
Here's the one right here.
Uh-huh.
When mom and daddy split up, then daddy moved on. Now daddy got him a new woman. That'd be a real problem. She better not do my baby's hair. I don't want her in my baby's hair.
That's when it gets real.
You know, she buying clothes for the little girl, you know, or the little boy, and she don't want it. Or she ain't had no damn right taking my son getting his hair cut. I mean, come on. If there's going to be a blended family, they're going to have these roles. The roles are going to get blended, you know. But, again, it all becomes a matter of mutual respect. It's got to be a village. You know, it takes a village to raise
a
child.
Right.
And if that in the village. Go ahead.
The thing is that we sometimes deal with matters out of our own pain, not being concerned about the child's welfare.
We more concerned about the fact that, okay, he found him another woman. He ain't with me no more, so he ain't going to have nothing to do with my baby. That ain't hurt. That's hurting that baby. That ain't hurting him. You know what I'm saying?
It's both sides.
Don't get me wrong.
You ain't with her, so no, you ain't with the child.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we do it, you know. But we have to be more cognitive of the decisions we make in order to govern the children that we have brought into this world. A lot of times we abandon it, like the father will abandon, like you say, or the mother will make it where the father don't have no say-so or no, you know, no time he can spend with the child because she's mad at him.
Yeah.
Or he mad at her, so he's not coming around. That ain't how it's supposed to be, bro. We got to, like I said, we have to first take responsibility for the household that we've created. Now, if you, when I say a household, wherever you left a baby at, that's a household that you create. You know what I'm saying? Whether you stay somewhere else, and God, you might not have a key to that household, but you have a right to be in that household, and you have to have a presence in that household because you left a seed at that household.
Yeah.
But see, it has to come from the point where the man has to make the decision that I'm going to be in my child's life, and the woman also got to say, hey, I'm going to let him be in this child's life for the betterment of the child. Even though she hurt his hell, broke down his hell, she mad because every time she see him, he's smiling.
Yeah.
But I tell people all the time, the worst thing you can do to a woman that you broke up with is next time she see you, you be smiling and happy. She is upset, bro. She don't want you happy. She don't want you smiling. She wants you broke down and hurt just like she is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's we have to get past that. Huh? Exactly. This is the man cave. This ain't the queen of cave. Nobody asked for your input. But you're right, though. We, you know, men and women both.
Hey, JD.
From the same syndrome.
Hey, JD. JD, don't get put out of a happy home, bro. Don't get put out of a happy home.
Hey, man. Hey, let me tell you something about me, Steve. I'm gonna be the king of the castle, even if I'm the only one in the damn castle. So you stay out of my business. I got this here. I want some shit out of you. I'll squeeze your head. But anyway,
I tell you, Kunta Kinte talk real slick too. You see that nigga? He hobbled back, right?
Hey, I'm gonna tell you like my daddy used to say, Steve. If I can't run the house, I burn it to the ground and start all over, damn it. And that's just all there is to it. That's a Bobby Daniels quote, nigga. If I can't run my house, I burn it to the ground and start over. Yeah, nah. And I said that in front of everybody. Fight, go with it.
I ain't mad at you.
Nah.
Can we say the fight that go with it?
Problems, I don't want to fight. Huh? I don't want to fight.
He's
hey,
the fight
look,
that
let me tell y'all something. JD just talking noise. Don't y'all believe that.
I don't want to fight.
Don't follow that advice.
Don't follow my advice and end up outside. But let me tell you something. My wife, I know one thing. My wife run the house. She didn't let me think I run the house. So I'm cool with it. I told her, long as she keep fooling me, I'm cool with it. Just keep me blind. I'm good.
Just keep the illusion going, huh?
Hey, man. It's like a magic trick. It's like, look, like, what's that boy name? David Blaine?
Yeah.
Yeah, like David Blaine over here, Brothers Illusion. It's all smoke and mirrors. But, I'm just. but man, we gotta get back to the mentality where we do, as black people, you know, men and women, both in broken homes and broken relationships, we got to understand that we need to do what's best for them children.
Yeah.
You know, quit being selfish and holding out and you got, we all go through if we've ever had a relationship that's failed or whatever, where the woman will use the child as a pawn, the man will use the child as a bargaining tool. So it's give and take on both ends. But the main focus needs to be on these children and getting them lined up and headed in the right direction. But we got too many broken homes out there, too many failed relationships, too many children that have gotten, you know, neglected and living in chaos because of these broken homes and the decisions that their parents have made. But, you know, you got to understand something. These kids did not ask to come into this world.
Yeah.
And once you bring a child in this world, it's your responsibility to take care of them first,
make sure they fed and they eat and got everything they need. But it's also a responsibility to teach these kids what they need to know to become
so they can contribute.
Yeah, become positive, contributing adults. And too many times, like I said, you in these households, I've seen it all the time. These kids, like I used to tell my sister, I don't know what the hell you're gonna be when them kids get through raising. Yeah, when them kids get through raising, because you ain't doing nothing to raise them. You know, that was when she was real young, but now she full fledged.
Yeah.
But you know that's another concept that we need to talk about is these young parents having these kids. You got a mama who's 14 years old older than the baby.
Yeah.
That means she was a baby when she had that baby. She didn't know no better. You know, didn't have no help. She had to raise that baby the best she knew how. And a lot of times that baby didn't get what that baby needs. So we got to get back to making better decisions as black people, period, man. We have really ruined the entire generation. I don't know what, man, I'm so scared of these kids up under us. Because I don't know what the hell they're going to do with themselves. I have no idea, brother. And Steve, I know you scared to death around that school aisle with the kids you deal with.
No, they scared. I ain't scared.
Well, I'm just
what I am fearful of is I'm fearful of coming to school one day, man, and having to hear that I lost one. You know, when I was in South Park,
every
year I lose one. You know, I would lose one, and that really warmed my heart, man. Where it got to the point where I was like, you know what, I can't do another year here. I mean, I love kids. You know, and then, you know, leadership switched around. And I'm like, you know, let me go ahead and just move and take my talents to another community like this,
right,
closer to home. So I went from South Park to Acres Homes. I live in Springs, so Acres Homes is closer to, you know, closer to home. But similar, very, very similar community. Kids still riding around on horses, you know.
Right.
Kids still talking shit, you know. Kids still coming from apartments,
right,
you know, 790. You know, the bricks, you know, they still, you know, I still got, you know, all them type of kids, but I always want to make sure I paid it forward, you know, to give back.
Right.
And be something positive, man, because I had, you know, I'm lucky and fortunate to still have my father in my life. My dad, I grew up in a house with my dad, you know, but my dad instilled some things in me that when I had friends who had little brothers and their dad wasn't in the house, and how,
right,
I related to them, like, man, you real good with kids, man, you ought to F engineering, you ought to go ahead and, you know, teach, you know. And then when I started thinking, I said, you know, I can't sit behind no cubicle, I can't sit no cubicle, that's just not for me. So when I did start with kids anyway. Oh yeah,
right.
And it worked out well for me.
When I said I know you scared, I meant. What I meant to say was I know you're fearful of their future because of the attitude that some of them have, and I know you see their attitudes, and you know, you try to put your finger on them and change the attitude, but a lot of times those attitudes are so deeply rooted in their conscience that you can't, you know, even your touch sometimes don't persuade them to go a different way. Now, you're going to have one or two that you are able to touch and change their lives and whatnot. You know, I know you it hurts your heart a lot of times, the ones that you lose.
Yeah, well, what I learned to do was I try to bridge that gap, man, with me in the home. I try to make contact at home, so I give them thugs, I'm gonna call the house. I don't care, calling. All
right,
I call. You know, next thing, man, how come you called my OG last night, man? Why you called my mom? I said, man, it wasn't about pimping or telling on you, man. It's just about making contact. So what did your mama tell you? Oh, basically, so I'm your school dad is what you seen, right, son? You know, man, come on, man, stop tripping. I ain't tripping, son. You know, come on, school, son. Daddy loves you. And, you know, but then at that point, it gets to be like a little joke, but they really start depending on that school dad. Hey, man, hey, coach, man, I got to pay for my physical, man. I ain't got no money, man. Hey, man, as long as you're here, you ain't got to worry about paying nothing, man. Go tell coach I said, put you down. I got his money. you know, for your physical. Or,
right.
Coach, man, we're supposed to get $5 for this field trip, and my mama did. Man, don't worry about that. Go to the office and tell them, put your name down.
See?
Tell them I got it. And that's boys and girls, you know. You know, hell, I still got kids. I still got kids that call me dad. I know I ain't nowhere near biologically responsible.
Right.
But it was just that love
and
I put out there.
The thing is, Steve, and you're doing what I say a lot of us need to do in our communities. You have taken responsibility for some of these kids that are not your kids. But the thing is, you took responsibility. That's what I be talking about with black men. We need to get back to that mentality of taking responsibility first for our own household. Then once you take responsibility for your household, you step out in the community and do things like you're doing. Touch some of these kids
who
don't have fathers in their household. You know what I'm saying? And become a surrogate father to some of these cats. Because they need it.
Well, here's the thing, JD. Well, here's the thing.
Yes, sir.
I didn't just pick this up, man. I watched my dad do it. I watched my dad
exactly.
do it with one of my best friends, Mark Mitchell. His dad left him. I remember going to the grocery store. We pushing two grocery baskets, one for our house and one for his. Now, how my mom and my dad did that? You know, they came together on that. You know, my dad like, hey, we got to make sure we help out Mark. Mark was him and his brother, man, were standout athletes. But, you know, mama was sickly. You know, daddy left and, you know, they needed help. And my mom and dad was like, well, we'll step in. You know, we'll stand in together. And I learned that from
village,
my dad.
That's the village mentality,
that's
though.
The village.
You know, the village
that's
takes
the
care
village.
Of the village.
Yeah, my grandfather
was the same. Yeah, I mean, and I've seen my mother, you know, right down that corner of Hirschwood, feed a bunch of cats. You know what I'm saying? You come down there hungry if you want to. You won't leave that hungry. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That was just our household. Like I said, look, let me tell you something, Steve. I'll never forget the fact that, because my daddy was a truck driver, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Man, we was one of the first people on Hirschwood to have a microwave, brother. I remember when the microwave was big as a color TV. That thing was so big. Some white folks gave my daddy a microwave, and he brought that thing home. And let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you how old the microwave was. The microwave it was so long ago that when you open the door of the microwave, it still stayed on. It didn't cut off automatically back in the day when they first started. And I don't know if y'all remember, but I'm telling you, a microwave was big as a 27-inch color TV.
Yeah,
that thing was huge in the head.
Oh, yeah.
But we had one,
and
brothers would come down our house and bring hot dogs and stuff like that. Just so they can watch look through the window and watch the microwave cook the hot dogs.
Yeah.
And we would take hot dogs out of our refrigerator and stuff like that and just put it in some water and watch. But, you know, that I'm just saying it was that type of mentality. And the fact that we, you know, I came from a household where we had daddy and mama in there. So we had a little more than some people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But my mama was never one that she didn't help the neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? We weren't not to help other people. We learned that because we watched our parents do the same thing. So that's why I say we got to get back to the village-type mentality when it comes to our black community. Else we're going to keep on having these tragedies. We're going to lose kids. It falls through the cracks. We're going to study at a high crime rate. We're going to have a high, you know, what they call jail turnover rate.
Yeah.
All that. We're going to have all that in our community until I personally think that it is up to the black man. You know, the black woman been doing it by herself so long, and it ain't been working right. So I think the key is for the black man to step back into the equation, put himself back in the equation, and let's try to see if it'll work that way. Because it used to work in the 60s. You know, early the 50s, the 60s, all that made it work. Because it was a two-parent household, and the kids was raised right. Nowadays, with that single mother, man, it's nothing but destruction coming out of them households, bro.
It also goes back to the government again. Well, you know, you let the woman get on housing, but the man can't stay with you.
It's a lot of different dynamics.
We could touch on, you know.
Right.
Remember that show back in the day? Was it Caroline?
Claudine,
Claudine,
one of my favorite movies.
When they come over, you have to
hide.
Yeah,
had to hide the iron. Oh, come on, man.
They couldn't have certain stuff.
Oh, believe me, the government designed it. Well, let me tell you something. Back in the 60s, they knew back then the black household was too powerful. They knew it was too powerful. Too much organization in the black household back then. So they had to, they knew the best thing they could do was take the black man out of the household and destroy the family. They knew that. And the systematic way that they did it was, first thing they did was...
disenfranchisement.
Yeah, exactly.
Disenfranchisement.
First thing they did, first thing they started doing was taking a wood shop, plumbing, electrical, all that out of public schools. Because they knew
that if a man learned how to do that,
yeah, if a man knew how to work with his hands, he could make a living wage and take care of a household. So they had to take that out of here first. Second thing they did was make it illegal for you to stay at the house. They started hiring the black woman and not hiring the black man. Because, see, what they did was they knew that if the black woman made more money than the black man, then he was no longer economically valuable to that household.
Yeah.
So with that being... him no longer being economically valued, that took away his authority in the house. And with no authority, ain't no man gonna stay.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he didn't disrespect her at all over and over again, because look, you ain't the breadwinner no more. So black women started feeling like I don't need him.
Yeah.
Not understanding that that's gonna hurt their babies, hurt them babies. You need him to help you raise them kids.
Yeah.
You don't need him just because of his money. You know, but that's part of the big problem that happened in the 60s. And here we are today in 2020, still having problems from the fallout.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Just trickle down.
Hey, man, look here. It didn't trickle down, it snowballed. and when it rolled down the damn hill, that ball got bigger and bigger because it knocked the whole damn house down. Yeah, it snowballed. It didn't just trickle down. Trickle down. Pete trickle down. but snowball come rolling hard. Yeah, but how much time we got left, Miss Queen?
Yeah.
11 minutes. Okay, well look, KJ, you got something you want to talk about this week, brother?
No, my main thing was that dude that got killed in Georgia. You hit that off the bat.
Yeah, I thought that. You want me to tell you why I hit that that off the bat? Cause that burned me up, brother. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
And the thing about it, the thing that burned me up the most about it, KJ, is that it happened in February. We just heard about it this past week.
Yeah.
And the only reason I'm telling you we heard about it down here in Texas is because it leaked in Atlanta. And the only reason they did anything about it is because it leaked. If it had never leaked out and got to the public like it did, them white boys still be walking around just like they've been walking since February 23rd. Nothing happened.
The
they have never been arrested.
Because the older guy involved in the situation, he used to be an investigator for that county. Now,
right.
He's well respected in that county, and the district attorney put her oath of upholding the law aside and decided to not charge him with anything, hoping it would just go away.
The good old boy mentality, brother, I told you.
When it started picking up steam, she tried to pass it off to another DA in another county. DA didn't want to do nothing with it. They brought it back to that county, and she tried to make it seem, and she basically tried to say, well, look, I can't try it because the DA in the other county didn't try it because the DA in the other county's son works in the same office that he's retired. Basically, a bunch of white folks trying their best to avoid having to charge this man. Well, the dude that took the video, was actually with them, with the two white boys that did. He wasn't with them when they shot him, but he was part of the group that was going after the brother.
Right.
He released the video. He leaked the video out. He said he leaked the video out because he thought the video would clear their name because you can't. He thought on the video, he was basically trying to say on the video it looked like the black dude ran up on them, which obviously he didn't. This dude is running. He's running the long way around the truck. They jammed him up.
Uh-huh.
What man with sense would run up on two men with a gun?
Right.
Man,
it's just a classic
example of a rules not playing for us, because you let that have been JD, KJ, and Reggie, and we shot a white dude that was jogging, talking about we tried to detain him because he looked like somebody.
Right. He looked like a suspect.
We would be in jail, no bond, and as soon as they could get our ass in that court. Execution frame, what they going to do?
We live and not make it to court, brother.
I know y'all have seen that I started a support group for them niggas trying to raise money for their legal fees.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Man, I saw that.
It's George Zimmerman all over.
Hey, let me explain something, KJ. This case we talking about, at least five of these happen every week that we don't hear about, brother. Did y'all, hey, Steve, I saw you post on Facebook about the brother who got killed the other day on the side of the road where the lawman said that he ran up on him and snatched his taser, and he shot it.
Oh, he a damn lie.
And look, the brother that was in the black BMW, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Adrian Medeiros.
That was right here in Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah, the lawman say that he when his car broke down or something, Steve?
I don't know. It didn't say it broke down. I just said that he.
Yeah, his car was, anyway, I think he was having a car truck, and the lawman pulled up on it. And some kind of way it got into a confrontation. That's what the lawman said. But his family say he wasn't even that type of guy.
Everybody say that.
Right. But they say he got into a confrontational situation with the lawman, and the lawman say he pulled his taser. That the brother grabbed his taser off his side from him.
Yeah.
So he say he feared for his life because the guy had the taser, and he say that's why he unloaded his gun. He fired his service weapon and killed the brother.
Why would he grab the taser and not the gun? I mean, was the dude on drugs or something? Was he mentally ill? I'm not gonna grab a taser,
bro.
We're trying to do something.
The thing I told you, you think exactly like me. If I'm trying to get a weapon, I'm not gonna grab your taser. I'm going for that gun.
Yeah.
If I'm trying to do something to you, I'm not gonna grab your taser first.
Sometimes common sense is just common sense.
Hey man, common sense ain't that common though. Let's talk about that.
Let me tell you something about holsters. There's no way he could have grabbed that taser from the front and pulled it. The only way to draw that, he had to have been behind him to draw on that weapon from
behind
him. You can't draw it forward
without
that holster. Let alone if you got that close enough to me to grab it, then he'd have been shot point blank with the gun.
Exactly.
Because if you're that close to me and you grab that gun, if I grab my servicer, they're taught to grab that. I've watched them qualify at the range, how they do a quick draw, they grab and they pull it and they shoot from the hip.
Exactly.
If that is the case, if that guy grabbed his taser, then he should have shot him from the hip. So that means a belly to center mass shot. And where's the camera? When they have encounters,
right,
the camera's supposed to get cut on. So where's the video for?
Exactly.
That's what I want to see. I want to see video. And don't tell me that his camera wasn't working that day. I don't hear that bullshit. Because they ain't supposed to leave the shop.
As long
the
as they don't do this, that camera's supposed to be on.
Well, as long as they continue to cover up, things are never going
to
change.
Like I said, there's hunting season for brothers, man. Brothers, these brothers need to understand that it is hunting season on black men, period. And they're going to sweep it under the rug. They're going to lie on the paperwork. Brother, look here. That's why I never, ever want to get stopped by the police. I don't care what the situation. I don't even stop and ask the law for direction, bro. I got Google. I'm good.
The fact that a dog.
I'll run out a whole tank of gas before I stop and ask the lawman.
Fact that a dog has more rights than a black man.
Exactly.
I mean, you can kill a dog and get some jail time.
You can kill a black man and get out. You get death duty for about 30 days, and then you back on patrol again. Yeah, that's crazy. But, hey, man, that's the city, the life, the country we living in. And I tell people all the time,
Donald Trump ain't done nothing but expose America's hate. That's all he's done.
The land of the free.
I don't know what freedom you're talking about. But that's all Donald Trump, you know, Donald Trump has done is he made all of the racists that were underground stick their head up. See, all the racism that's been in America that was underground and they were, look, now I think I tell people now, white folks can do it in your face now.
Yeah.
Same trick. They used to be kind of shy about doing it, try to make it, what they call it, incognito. Now they do it in your face. They let you know you're a nigger to them today, right now. Yeah, that's just how they feel. And let me tell you something. I ain't saying all white people are bad, because if all white people were bad, we'd still be slaves right now today. I'd be talking to you on this show from a plantation. But since I'm not, there were some white people who helped us along the way. But don't ever think that racism is not alive and well in the United States, brother. And we see episode after episode of it. And again, it gets swept under the rug. It gets, you know, it gets whitewashed. That's the only thing I say. It gets whitewashed.
In the words of Muhammad Ali, if you see a whole bunch of snakes coming towards you,
exactly.
Are you going to take the time to figure out which one is the good snake and which one is the bad snake?
Or you just going to keep them all away from
you? You know what I'm saying? It's like that sometimes. I hate to say it, but
it's true.
I got some white people I'm cool with. So.
Exactly.
But, you know, it is what it is.
I'm going to tell you how. Let me tell you about me and white people. I treat them accordingly.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is I give you a chance to show me who you are. If you show me that you're racist, that little hint of racism, that little kiki, that laugh, but man, look here, I know how you feel for real, white boy. And once you show me that, I'm done fooling with you.
Yeah.
Now I ain't got no white friends.
Yeah.
I got some white people I know. I got some white people I speak to, but I ain't got no white friends. I just don't trust them like that. That's just me. I mean, I grew up around I went to middle school with a bunch of them.
Yeah, you got 500 years of getting messed up.
I was in middle school. Huh? What you say?
I said we got 500 reasons to not trust
you. Exactly. You better know it. But anyway, hey, fellas, look here. I want to thank y'all for coming on the show tonight, man. We had a wonderful conversation. Like I said, these are the conversations that black men need to sit around and have with one another. And maybe we can start getting some things straightened out, man. So, again, Steve-O, I appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate it.
Rem KJ.
Already.
Ain't no
KJ,
doubt.
Appreciate you, brother. Even though you were late, that's all right. But love you anyway, bro. But, yeah, see y'all next week. And Big Rich, I appreciate you coming in, man, and sitting around with me and chopping it up. So, again, this is JD on JD's Man Cave. We'll see y'all again next week. Next Saturday, 7 o'clock. We'll be back here. Taking care of our business around here. Black men, let's start taking responsibility for what we started, what we created, and let's get our communities back, man. Start today. Thank y'all. Appreciate it.
Already.